Good afternoon. My name is Maria, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Two Decades of Polling on Gay and Lesbian Issues at Pew. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. Now I would like to turn the call over to the CEO of Public Religion Research Institute, Dr. Robert Jones. Please go ahead, sir.
Hi. Thank you, everyone, for being on the call today to discuss Public Religion Research's latest report entitled Two Decades of Polling on Gay and Lesbian Issues at Pew. If any of you are online right now, you can access the report at our website at www.publicreligion.org. That's publicreligion.org. There's a link there on the homepage. It'll take you straight to the report. You can actually load both the press release and the PDF of the report itself if you want to look at it while we're going along. So thanks again for everyone for being on a Friday afternoon in August. The report that we have is hopefully to provide some context in the wake of recent federal court rulings on same-sex marriage and Public Religion Research's own recent polling last month in California on Proposition 8 and same-sex marriage there. Today we're releasing a comprehensive report that contains analysis and assessment of more than two decades of polling on attitudes about lesbian and gay people and issues. The PRRI report reviews the entire history of polling on attitudes about homosexuality and gay rights since 1987 by the Pew Research Center, which, as most of you know, is one of the most important sources of nonpartisan public polling information on American cultural and political attitudes. The discussion today will focus on shifting public attitudes on gay and lesbian issues, and we'll assess some issues of question design and interpretation, and we'll discuss the implications of the findings for policies regarding gay and lesbian people in America. In addition to the PRRI research team, we're privileged today to have with us on the call two PRRI board members who have expertise in this area, Reverend Rebecca Vogel and Professor Clyde Wilcox. I will introduce both of them now, and then we'll turn the call over to Dan Cox, the Director of Research at PRRI. Reverend Rebecca Vogel is an ordained minister in the United Church of Christ and the Program Director for the Institute for Welcoming Resources, a program of the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force. She's a graduate of Yale Divinity School and is currently working toward a Doctor of Ministry degree at United Theological Seminary of the Twin Cities. Professor Clyde Wilcox is professor of government at Georgetown University, where he's taught for more than 20 years. He's the author and editor of more than 30 books and numerous articles on politics, religion, and social issues. He's done a lot of work in this area. Without further ado, I'm going to turn over the opening kind of substantive remarks to Daniel Cox, who is the co-author of the report and the director of research here at Public Religion Research Institute. So, Dan, off to you.
Thanks, Robbie. I'm going to begin the discussion by talking about the frequency with which Pew has asked questions about gay and lesbian issues, follow up with some trends on some of these issues, and round out the discussion on some salience of same-sex marriage. So to begin, Pew asks hundreds of questions each year on an array of topics of interest to journalists, public policymakers, and the general public. Yet despite the invaluable information these snapshots of public opinion provide, coverage has not been equal across time periods or topics. Since 1987, Pew's asked 148 questions related to gay and lesbian issues, but it represents no more than 3% of the total questions asked during this time period. And the vast majority of questions on gay and lesbian issues have been asked since 2000. By far, the most frequently asked questions, types of questions, focus on public policy, covering four basic issues: same-sex marriage, civil unions, adoption, and military service. Of these issues, same-sex marriage has been asked most frequently, a total of 20 times since 2003. The other policy issues were asked much less frequently. Because Pew asked same questions at several different points of time, we can draw some conclusions about the trend of opinion about these policies and also about the attitudes towards homosexuality in general. On the issue of civil unions, the Pew data shows support steadily increasing, shifting from 45% in 2003 to 57% in 2009, a 12-point increase in support. On the issue of same-sex marriage, opinion has fluctuated much more, although the overall trend shows an increase from 30% in 2003 to 38% in 2010. Interestingly, the data also shows what I would call two election effects. Around the 2004 and 2006 elections, we see a dip in support for same-sex marriage. And these two elections, as many of you know, coincided with significant campaigns around state ballot propositions to ban same-sex marriage. On the other two issues, adoption rights and military service, opinion has remained relatively stable from 2003 to 2010. About 6 in 10 Americans favor allowing gay and lesbian people to serve openly in the military, while slightly less than half favor allowing gay and lesbian couples to adopt children. I would offer a note of caution here, though, for these two questions have only been asked a couple times during this time period, 3 times for adoption and 4 times for military service. Thus, with so few points of data, it is difficult to make any definitive statement about the overall trend here. That said, there's some evidence of growing acceptability of gay and lesbian people raising children. In 1997, 56% majority of Americans said that more gay and lesbian couples raising children represented a bad development for society. By 2010, only 42% agreed that this was a bad thing for society, a 14-point drop. The last trend I want to talk about is in the attitudes about the acceptability of homosexuality. In 1994, nearly half, 49% of Americans, said that homosexuality was a way of life that should be discouraged, and 46% said it is a way of life that should be accepted. In 2007, these numbers were reversed, with 50% saying that it should be accepted and 40% saying it should be discouraged, a 10-point gap. The last thing I want to touch on is the salience of same-sex marriage as a political issue. And what the numbers seem to show here is that although among many Americans, the same-sex marriage is an important issue, there's less political salience that we've seen and that happened across electoral contexts. For instance, in 2004, when public attention to the issue was at its greatest, only 32% said the issue would be very important to their vote. 4 years later, in 2008, 28% of Americans said it was very important to their vote. And this year, in 2010, roughly the same number, 29% of Americans said that same-sex marriage would be a very important factor in their upcoming vote. One last thing I think I would mention here is the differential importance for supporters and opponents. And by that I mean that the issue of same-sex marriage holds greater political significance for opponents than it does supporters, and this has been true across different electoral contexts. Now I'll turn it back over to Robbie, who will talk about the different ways pollsters ask about the issue of same-sex marriage and offer up some evaluations.
Thanks, Dan. As Dan noted, I think if you sort of step back from that, the one big picture that emerges here is, and the prominent findings of the report is a long general increase in support for public acceptance of homosexuality and for the rights of gay and lesbians, with the caveat that there are still significant divides on the issue of adoption and same-sex marriage. Now, before I turn it over to Reverend Vogel and Professor Wilcox, I want to focus just a few comments on the assessment section of the report, where we looked at strengths and issues of question wording and some issues of interpretation. First, I just want to start with the issue of strengths, and as the report attests, the data from the Pew Research Center remains one of the most trusted and important sources of trend data on gay and lesbian and other issues. And I certainly want to say a word of gratitude. We are indebted to Pew's commitment to transparency. The fact that they make their data sets public allows analysis like this one to be done. And moreover, for those with an interest in religion, Pew Research reliably includes solid religious demographic measures. So a couple of limitations to note, and then I'll an issue of question wording and interpretation. Just beyond the question of same-sex marriage, Dan referred to this, Pew polling on gay and lesbian issues has been more occasional than systematic. So we don't always see even the set of questions they ask most often on the same survey. They'll sometimes be on one and then on another, so sometimes making direct comparisons between the two is often difficult to do. Pew also focuses on basic attitude benchmarks and not often on some of the nuances of policy provisions, so we don't see questions, for example, gender persons in employment non-discrimination laws or other religious exemptions that are often part of the play at a more nuanced level in policies. And then finally, Pew tends to focus on national, not state-level data. So we get national public opinion, but not a lot of state-level information. So the second thing I want to do is to focus on an issue of question wording and focus in on one question that that Dan mentioned already. And before I do that, just sort of say this by way of caveat. You know, every polling firm, including our own, is somewhat captive to trends. And, you know, changing a word in a question destroys the ability to track trends. On the other hand, you know, questions that sound neutral at one point in time are often seen in retrospect to have some hidden assumptions that weren't really apparent at the time. And then there's always a push and pull about whether to hang on to the trend or change the question to kind of reflect more reflective sensibilities. One question where this is true, where the wording could be more neutral and descriptive, is the question that Dan touched on. It's one of Pew's longest-running trend questions that features the declarative phrase, homosexuality is a way of life, so quote, end quote, on both sides of a forced choice question about whether it should be accepted or discouraged by society. And this wording embeds really an assertion that's really part of the debate into the question stem. Pew's asked this question 15 times, but it hasn't been included on the survey since 2007. But it is one place where there's something that an attitude that should probably be measured about whether or not people consider it a way of life or innate. And Pew has asked questions on those questions in other questions, but it's embedded into the question stem here, and probably one place where some improvement could be made. And finally, an issue of interpretation on attitudes towards same-sex marriage and civil unions. This is really relevant for journalists, policymakers, advocacy groups, and the public. And this really has to do with how polling organizations ask about the question of same-sex marriage and civil unions. There are basically two approaches. One is to ask a binary question about favor and oppose or agree, disagree with same-sex marriage itself. And then the other approach is to ask about a three-part question that includes same-sex marriage, civil unions, and no legal recognition. While both approaches are perfectly legitimate, it's important to sort of for journalists and others to sort of know what they're getting when they're looking at a two-part question versus the three-part question. So just one example of this is in 2008, both Pew and Public Religion Research Institute were in the field relatively the same time. Pew had a two-part question, PRRI had a three-part question, and Pew found 39% favored same-sex marriage with 52% opposed, and just a favor-opposed question that didn't include a civil unions option. But when we asked a three-part question from the same period, we found only 29% support for marriage with 28% support for civil unions and 37% opposed to legal recognition. So basically the upshot of this analysis, and it's just something to know in a way of interpretation, that if one is interested in levels of solid support for same-sex marriage, the two-part question used by Pew should be interpreted with some caution, since binary question formulations may actually overestimate solid support for same-sex marriage by as much as 10 percentage points. So by way of closing and turning it over to Reverend Vogel, I just want to say our hope is that this new PRRI report will provide a lens for journalists and the public to understand the implications of these long-term trends. And just want to say again, we're really indebted to Pew for this significant body of work over the last two decades. So now we'll turn it over to Rebecca Vogel.
Thanks, Robbie. I really appreciate it. I just wanted to say again how much I'm appreciative of this report and the comprehensive nature of it. And just so folks know, my primary work is around helping religious communities be active supporters of LGBT persons. So that's kind of the particular lens that I come to this conversation as an advocate. And there's one piece that is in the report that Robbie and Dan have not lifted up, but that is a question in the study that talks about the percentage of regular church attenders who say that their clergy talk about laws regarding homosexuals. And there has been an increase from 1996 to 2006 from 36% to 52%. But unfortunately, in 2003, nearly three-quarters of those who had heard their clergy speak about issues related to homosexuality reported that their clergy said that homosexuality should be discouraged. So while I am very happy and glad for the trends, and I really do feel like there is the universe does in fact bend towards justice, and folks are increasing by and large their support for LGBT persons in society. I think one of the kind of cautionary notes that I take from the report is the continuing role that religion plays in anti-LGBT attitudes and behaviors in our country. And two things I take from that. One is that it continues to be increasingly important for religious folks as to be speaking on behalf of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender persons, and that we need to have a lot more data around the ways in which religion impacts people's support around LGBT issues. And I just want to say a little bit more about that. I think both Dan and Robbie talked about the fact that this survey data is kind of more occasional than systematic, and also asking questions that don't really bring up data around trans, transgender, or bisexual folks. And particularly as we're working in religious communities, that's an area that I think we very much need a lot more data. And so I'm so grateful to Pew for all the work that they've done, and I want to continue to lift up the ways in which the collection of data around religious issues, and as I say, particularly around bisexual and transgender issues, are incredibly important, because as we're working on any sort of LGBT issues, even folks who don't perhaps name religiosity as don't claim religiosity, they often utilize religious arguments in their opposition to LGBT folks. So with that, I would like to turn it over to Professor Clyde Wilcox. Clyde, are you there? Clyde?
This is the operator. He's disconnected. He's dialing back in right now.
All right.
Everyone will just bear with us for just a minute. We'll get Professor Wilcox back on.
Yeah, sorry. They're doing work on our cable outside, and apparently they've temporarily knocked off our phone line, so I'm here.
Great. So off to you, Professor Wilcox.
Okay. So, you know, I think that the Pew surveys are a wonderful resource for students and scholars, and I've published quite a bit from these, and I found this report to be really very useful. I just like to make three sort of points here. First of all, echoing Robbie about the sort of nature of the change in public attitudes, there's very few things that have changed in American public opinion as dramatically as support for gay and lesbian rights. Since 1994, the numbers just really pop off the charts over a 20-year period. You can't quite see that if you look over a few years because there's little ebbs and flows of this, but it's really been kind of a tidal wave of change. And these trends all occur across all religious communities, so that white evangelical fundamentalists today are far more accommodating to gays and lesbians than they were 20 years ago, and so are Catholics, and so are mainline Protestants. Secondly, I want to say that I'm looking forward to the new Pew release, which should be coming in the next week or so, because quite a few other polls, including Gallup and CNN, have shown a fair amount of movement this particular year. So Gallup finds for the very first time a majority thinking that homosexuality is morally acceptable, for example. And underlying a lot of this change is a very large generational gap, where in most of my work, young people are 15, 20, 25 points more liberal than the oldest people in society. Finally, picking up on Robbie's point about question wording always matters in surveys, but when does it matter most? I think it matters most when the public is somewhat ambivalent, and therefore the way the question is worded allows them, to show that ambivalence. So, for example, in this marriage versus civil union or just yes or no on marriage, the public is a little ambivalent on marriage. There's a lot of people who want to be able to support it but have very traditional ideas of marriage in their heads from their religious background. Maybe they know some gays and lesbians, but they, were conservative 15 years ago. And so one of the things I've noticed is that if you talk to people in depth, they'll begin to talk about this ambivalence. So the question wording, one of the reasons we need to pay attention to it is because people have conflicting ideas and conflicting values. They're not exactly sure where they stand on some of these things, and so multiple types of questions help us get a better picture of where people stand. So that's it.
All right, great. Thank you, Professor Wilcox. So with that, we'll turn it over to the operator and to questions answers from questions from people on the line. And we'll ask that members of the press ask questions first, and then we'll move to other questions after that.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question at this time, please press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Our first question comes from the line of Bill Tamaz of Kansas City Star. Please pose your question.
Thank you. I write a blog for the Star, but I also write columns for the Presbyterian Outlook and the National Catholic Reporter. Here's my question. Given the reality that a substantial segment of Christian leaders regularly describes homosexuality as an abomination in God's eyes, will the U.S. ever get to a point at which a large majority of the population would support civil unions, gay marriage, and other matters that suggest support for LGBT people as opposed to condemnation?
Well, this is Reverend Vocal. Robbie, should I?
Yeah, go ahead, and then I'll follow on. Yep.
Okay, great. Well, certainly what, even though, you know, I raise this question of concern about sort of the numbers of negative voices that people are hearing from their pastors, we do work primarily within religious communities, we continue to find lots of both anecdotal and data, hard data, for the growing support of LGBT folks within and especially within religious communities. I'll let Robbie talk perhaps to the some recent polling around Roman Catholic support, but even though the bishops continue in the Roman Catholic tradition continue to be sort of very anti-LGBT in their public statements, we don't see that same sort of rhetoric on a parish level within the Roman Catholic Church, and we find that Roman Catholics as a body, I think the statistic these days is 63% support LGBT persons. And so certainly, you know, we've just come from the Presbyterian General Assembly where support for ordination equality was just passed, and although marriage equality was defeated, it was by much closer margins than have happened in the past. So particularly in mainline Protestant denominations, those gaps are closing rapidly. But even within evangelical circles and Pentecostal circles, we continue to see increasing support, and a lot of that has to do with the pro-LGBT folks within each of those traditions finding more voice and being much more proactive around organizing the pro-LGBT folks within their religious traditions. Robbie?
Yeah, great. No, it's a really important question. You know, one of the things we just got out of the field, Public Religion Research did, with a major poll in California, kind of 2 years out from Prop 8 poll. And, you know, one of the things that we found there is a general pattern that, and you see it in the national data as well, but on when we asked a question about sort of if you had to vote again today on Prop 8, how would you vote? And we had there's a real divide in the religious community, but we had three groups and some surprising ones. We had Latino Catholics, mainline Protestants, and white Catholics all saying that they would vote, if they were to vote again on Prop 8, they would vote against Prop 8, that they would vote to allow gay and lesbian couples to marry. And then on the other side of the divide, we had African-American Protestants, white evangelical Protestants, and Latino Protestants, all saying they would vote for Prop 8 or to make same-sex marriage illegal. So you see this kind of divide, but there's this interesting, you know, this interesting Catholic divide with Latino Catholics much more supportive than white Catholics, interestingly enough, and white Catholics looking basically like the general population on this issue, despite the kind of vocal opposition of the Catholic bishops and the official Catholic Church position. So it's really important to look at the, and this is one reason why having the state in front of us is really really helpful, is to see that, you know, the kind of, there's sometimes a clergy pew, not pew as in Pew Research Center, but pew as in the thing you sit in, gap on some of these issues. And
yeah, this is Dan. This is a great question. I would mention two things. First, it matters a lot what people are hearing in their church or worship service. We've asked in previous surveys not only if people are hearing about the issue of homosexuality, but what their clergy leaders are saying, whether it's something that should be accepted, something that should be discouraged, or whether they're not taking a position on the issue. And we found a significant correlation between people are hearing negative messages and opposition to same-sex marriage, meaning that people who are hearing negative messages are much more likely to oppose same-sex marriage than people who are hearing positive or accepting messages. The second point I want to make is that there's a big generation divide that Clive referred to, and what we're seeing is a roughly two-thirds of people under the age of 30 supporting same-sex marriage, and that we've seen some evidence that clergy or religious institutions risk alienating a significant number of young folks if they take real hardline stances on same-sex marriage or gay and lesbian issues.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Adele Banks with Religion News Services. Please pose your question.
Hello. I was wondering if any of you could speak a little bit more to the breakdown for the specific questions relating to religious groups. There was on page 12, there was discussion about the religious institutions and clergy that Reverend Vocal mentioned. I just wondered if there was a breakdown of, like, the religious folks, you know, whether they be Catholic or evangelical, who said that they were hearing issues about laws and gays in their worship time.
So, Del, this is Robbie from PRRI. We can certainly get that to you. I don't think we've got that queued up right now, but we can certainly, like I said, the beauty of it, we have the data sets that Pew's provided, so we'd be happy to. Certainly happy to get that to you. You know, one thing certainly that I've mentioned before that, you know, we see in the data is I can get you, like, the one breakdown I'll give you is on the 2009 data on allowing gay and lesbian couples to marry. And we saw there 39% is the total in the country, and we have. Around that number, white mainland Protestants are at 40% support, Catholics at 44% support, the unaffiliated at 60% support, and then sort of in lower levels of support, much lower, is white evangelicals at only 18% support, and African American Protestants at 23% support.
Okay.
So you can really see some real distribution.
Right.
That's on the issue of marriage. Certainly what we found in the California survey is that interestingly enough, Protestants were more likely to hear about the issue, this is in California, the issue of same-sex
mm-hmm.
marriage and homosexuality in general than Catholics were. And again,
mm-hmm.
this is maybe a little bit counterintuitive
mm-hmm.
based on how the leadership has been.
Mm-hmm.
But at the local parish level, we had Protestants much more likely to support, to say they had heard about the issue in their churches. We'd be happy when we get off the line to kind of run the numbers for you on see if we can get you that number from the Pew data.
Thank you. And I'd also be interested in what Professor Wilcox was saying about the view over specific religious groups changing over 20 years.
Yeah, you know, you can really trace frequent attending white evangelical Protestants. And 20 years ago, they were not in favor of employment non-discrimination laws. They were not in favor of gays and lesbians serving openly in the military. And marriage would have just been a blip on the data, right?
Mm-hmm.
Today, among young, frequently attending white evangelicals, marriage and civil union are over 50%, one or the other, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And military service is up in the high 60s and so forth. And so The generational change is happening across all religious traditions, but it's also happening among the older members of these congregations. They're just all more liberal today than they were, you know, 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Okay. If there's anything more you can give about that, Robbie, I'd be interested. Thank
yeah,
we'll
I've got a couple tables from some things I've published that show this, but, you know, I can pull it into them.
Thank you.
Well, the other point to add in relationship to what you're saying as well as the previous question is that certainly while hearing negative messages from the pulpit, you know, there's quite a correlation with negative attitudes around LGBT folks. We also know that helping pastors stop saying negative things and so that folks hear nothing from the pulpit also has very positive impacts in terms of helping parishioners increase their support of LGBT folks. And so the reason I say that is in terms of the advocacy pieces of helping religious folks go from articulate, outspoken anti-LGBT stances to silence, not even having to move people to support, is critical to helping increase religious support for LGBT folks.
Our next question comes from the line of Nicole Brambilla of the Desert Sun. Please state your question.
Hi. If I understand correctly, earlier there was this discussion about how in the questionnaires asking more whether folks support civil unions, same-sex marriage, or not at all, gave different responses than just the support or non-support. Considering that here in California, at least, the measures that have gone before voters are either or, how important is that distinction, do you think?
So this is Robbie Jones from Public Religion Research Institute. It's a really great question. In our poll that we did in July among Californians and also in the California field poll, which was out just a bit before ours, actually both of our surveys asked both the three-part question and the two-part vote question.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what we see is it's exactly what Professor Wilcox was referring to, is that there is this sort of softness in if you ask the binary question, there's certainly some softness in those numbers, and it is about a kind of ambivalence, and it has to do with people who naturally gravitate toward basically a civil unions category, where they, if you give them that option, they'll take that option, and they tend to not want to say, I'm not for any rights for gay and lesbian couples, but they're maybe not quite fully in the marriage camp either. And you know, giving them that option, you sort of see them settle out, and we basically see, you know, somewhere between, you know, 8 to 10 points of the support in a binary question for marriage sort of gravitates into the civil unions category if people are given that option.
Do you think that's been a part of the problem with the polling, which leading, and I followed Proposition 8 before
yeah.
it happened, since the election, but, you know, going up into the election day, there was a lot of support in the polling for same-sex marriage, and then everybody was really surprised when the ban actually passed. Do you think because of this binary question that's kind of skewed the polls and therefore people how people understand them?
Well, you know, as a pollster, you have to ask, if it's about a vote, you've got to ask the binary question, right? Because people are only going to
Correct.
Be given that one question when they're actually sitting in the voting booth, so you want to know how they're going to fall. But I think back to this question of ambivalence, I mean, I think there is some soft support there, and that what that means is that in the last days of campaign, people who have some reservations, some you know, some concerns, they're not quite there, but they're leaning that way, are often open to influence by, you know, late in the day campaign messaging. And so you saw, you know, all kinds of, you know, media being from both sides really kind of being dumped in those last few days of the campaign. And, you know, and people who have, you know, people who are more certain of their views aren't going to be swayed by those messages, but people who have some ambivalences, some concerns, are more open to that persuasion. So I think I'd probably point to that and people actually just being a little on the fence and being, you know, pushed one way or the other by late in the day campaign messaging is probably, you know, as much the culprit as anything else.
And this, and just one more thing. Did I understand correctly that there's going to be another report that gauges sentiment coming out in the next week or so?
Yeah, this is Dan. The Pew Research Center releases their religion and politics survey once a year in the summer, and I think they released the, and Clyde, correct me if I'm wrong, they released the first part of the report this past week, and they'll release probably the next report in the next week or so, and that should have some measures on abortion and gay and lesbian issues as well.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Yep.
Our next question comes from the line of Joseph Palacios of Catholics for Equality. Please state your question.
Yes, thank you for this great information from Pew summarizing it. What I'm interested in is when you look at the polling data, you know, we get straightforward answers. I would like your interpretation of what might be shifting the attitudes the most. Do you believe the building of gays and lesbians are talking more to their friends, family members, coworkers about who they are? Is it the media shift? Is it political messaging or religious formation attitudes, moral theology, et cetera, that might be shifting also? I know it's a very general question, but I'd love your response.
All right, this is Robbie Jones. I'll take a first cut, and Clyde, you may want to jump in as well. I know you've done a lot of work on this. You know, when we've done regression analysis looking at independent predictors of people's views on same-sex marriage, there's a number of things that jump out. Clyde's already mentioned age, and this is certainly one of the strongest things. Going along with that is whether someone knows someone who is gay or lesbian, specifically whether someone has a close friend or family member, so not just an acquaintance, but a close friend or family member, a close relationship, is also a significant predictor of one's views. And this also is kind of co-correlated with being young, so that younger people are more likely to know and have people in their friendship circles who are gay or lesbian, and so that also is part of a more, much more likely than older folks to have that. In terms of religion, one other thing we have noticed is that a belief in biblical literalism in having a literal approach to the Bible that believes the Bible is a literal word of God and to be interpreted word for word is also a significant predictor in the negative direction of support for, so that's a predictor of opposition to same-sex marriage. So there's certainly, and then Dan's also mentioned the impact of clergy and the correlation there of messages people hearing in church. So if I'm echoing something Rebecca said earlier, it's clearly the case that on these issues, religious factors loom fairly large.
But Robbie, do you want to just mention a little bit from PRRI's mainline Protestant clergy survey? I was interested in that survey that, in fact, sort of biblical interpretation was lower down on the factors of clergy shifting their feelings towards LGBT folks.
Yeah.
Could you just say a little bit about that?
Sure. That was a question. We did a survey last year of mainline Protestant clergy, and one of the things that came there, among people who said their views had shifted over the last 10 years, we asked them what were the main causes of that shift, and a shift in biblical interpretation was something that registered fairly low on that list of things. But nonetheless, when we're in the general population and we're looking at people's views on the Bible, tend to be fairly highly correlated with support or opposition.
You know, thinking about, this is Clyde Wilcox, thinking about change, I mean, I teach at Georgetown University, and 20 years ago, if I had raised a gay rights issue in class, all of the guys would have been having a nervous little chuckle and looking around like they were 14. And, you know, we've maybe had 40% of the women being liberal. You know, it's been maybe 5 years since I've had any student that opposes same-sex marriage. So this whole notion about generational shift, it's really, really big. And anyone who has teenagers, those teenagers have gay and lesbian friends, right? So as the population sort of cycles through, this generational replacement is going to be really big. There's two other things. One is, you know, a lot more people know that they know people who are gay. They've always known people who were gay, but they didn't know that they were gay. People have come out. You can track surveys over 20 years, and it looks like almost half of the public has discovered that they know someone who's gay, which makes this a much more human issue for people. And then finally, the attitudes about where sexual orientation come from have changed, so that there's a much higher percentage now believing that this isn't something that you could just choose. This is not something all gay and lesbian right activists like to say, right? But once you believe then that this is, in a sense, not someone's fault, then discriminating against them seems really, really dicey.
I'll put one number on that out just very quick. But the one number we sort of have in the report from the Pew data is that between 2003 and 2006, the percentage of people who believe sexual orientation could not be changed has risen from 42% to 49%, so almost half just over that three-year period.
Well, and Joe, I just would want to add one more piece to your question, and that is certainly looking at the policy change that has happened in some of the mainline Protestant denominations in the last 7 years. Certainly the advocacy that has been done has been based on kind of relational organizing of, building relationships within local congregations, doing a lot of work around storytelling. So I just would echo all of this piece about knowing folks, having relationships with folks, humanizing the question. I don't want to downplay any of the other strategies that you lifted up, but certainly from my own perspective, the kind of field organizing, relational organizing in local congregations, in the places where religious folks gather, is absolutely critical.
Thank you so much.
Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. Our next question comes from the line of Dan Choi. Please state your question. Mr. Choi, your line is open.
Oh, hello. I just wanted to thank the entire panel for all of their very important work. My question relates a little bit to the wording of not only the surveys and questions, but also the dialogue that we're seeing in society and in political campaigns, whether we use the word homosexual, homosexuality or same sex versus gay or lesbian, equality, etc. We see, I think, a lot more of the effects of what wording that we use. I think most recently we saw in the Westat survey of Don't Ask, Don't Tell among the members of the military. Big difference. Can the panel please comment on the choice of words?
So this is Robbie Jones. I'll take a first cut at it. And you're absolutely right to point out the choice of wording. And I say, as a survey researcher, it's one of the most difficult things about doing survey research is trying to figure out, what is the best language that strikes the balance of being descriptive and neutral on the one hand and being recognizable by respondents on the other. So that is, for example, a phrase that that you hear in pro LGBT advocacy circles might be same gender loving relationships. Now, if we put that on a poll, we're going to have a high degree of don't knows because people won't really recognize that as what we're talking about. So there's always a real challenge of trying to kind of strike the right balance between finding language that's descriptive and neutral and doesn't have its finger on the scale or have embedded in assumptions that are actually part of the debate on the one hand, and trying to find something that that will be easily recognizable, short and to the point for a telephone survey that will actually work and get accurate data that we're really after. But you're right, it is a real source of ongoing discussion and of trying to find what those rights what the right balance is.
Lieutenant Choi, I would also add, unless were you about ready to jump in, Clay?
No, that's good. Go ahead.
Well, I just first of all really appreciate all of your work, and I do think that the another problem, particularly with the use of the language of homosexuality, is the way in which it just in its question leaves out transgender persons and narrows the scope of applicability around the larger LGBT community. So I just echo with what Robbie has just said, but I also, you know, I think in terms of some of our difficulty with how then to use some of the data around our work, that makes it difficult as well. Sorry, Clyde, please go ahead.
Yeah, the only thing I was going to point out is that there's a different logic to mobilizing and organizing and polling. That, you know, certain kind of phrases are important to help the public rethink the issue. But from Robbie's point of view as a pollster, you know, people are hearing conflicting frames about how we should think about this. And so the pollster wants to ask the question in a way that doesn't trigger the most sympathetic response because he wants to get a really accurate prediction of how people are likely to vote on a referenda. So if a phrasing is the most sympathetic possible to the GLBT community, then it's likely to not reflect exactly how some voters will be responding to the question on the ballot.
Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. And there are no further... Oh, I apologize. We do have a follow-up question from Bill Timaeus of Kansas City Star. Please go ahead.
I want to go back to the age question a minute. The indication that the younger generation is much more supportive of LGBT issues and so on. If you took this back 100 years, age didn't probably make much difference in how people felt about this. What is it about younger people that is making them change their mind? What are the change factors going on here?
Thanks for the question. You know, one thing I can think of is certainly what we've referred to about the higher numbers among younger people who know someone who's gay or lesbian, and that is also in itself directly correlated to support for same-sex marriage and a number of other policies around gay and lesbian people. So that's certainly one factor that's there is the fact that younger people are more likely to know people who are gay or to know that people are gay and lesbian sort of impacts their views.
Yeah, this is Dan. I definitely echo that view as well. In addition, the context of young people is significantly different than sort of their generational context is very different than it was in past generations among people under the age of 30. You know, their cultural context is that, you know, they are exposed to many more people in, you know, religiously mixed marriages who are ethnically, racial, religiously different than themselves. It's very sort of pluralistic, and that certainly is a driving factor. And the other that, you know, we should really mention is religiosity. We talked about how important religious beliefs were as predictors of support or opposition to same-sex marriage. And the fact is that young people right now are much less likely to be religious. They're much more likely to be unaffiliated, and then they're much less likely to attend regularly and much less likely to hold literal views of the Bible. So that's definitely playing a role as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
One thing I would add to that, though, is that Dan's absolutely right, but the young cohort is actually not more pro-choice on abortion.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not a generation that is, you know, just very libertarian in lifestyle. You know, they have grown up all their lives since they were, you know, 8 years old, knowing older siblings, friends who were gay and lesbian, having them in their homes or whatever. And so they, you know, my students, they can't imagine why this is even an issue. You know, if I say to them, this is something we should study, and they, you know, from their point of view, it's simply, we don't know what's wrong with California voters, but we don't see there's a policy issue here at all. So, but they are less pro-choice. And so it's not a generic, you know, non-religious or libertarian kind of response.
And this is Reverend Volkel. I would just echo, Dan, what you were saying about the, you know, some folks have been using the language of intersectional, but sort of people who in their own bodies have multiple identities and are working with a lot more understanding of pluralism and that their sort of sense of identity even is very different than, you know, even 10, 20 years ago. And I think that lends itself not only, I think you're lifting up the examples of interfaith relationships, being multiracial in one's own identity, that I do think that the LGBT issue is related to this questions around multi-faith interracial relationships, but multiple racial identity, and that those pieces are in fact connected.
Our next question comes from the line of Christian Asher of Change.org. Please state your question.
Hi. I'd like to get back to Reverend Vogel's comment that even people who do not define themselves as being religious tend to fall back on religious arguments when they are looking for justification to oppose things like marriage equality, I think was particularly the focus of that comment. What I'm wondering is, do the people who fall into that pattern recognize their own arguments as being religiously based, or is this some kind of an indication of the confusion that sometimes seems to be apparent in our society between, you know, about where the boundaries of religion are and what is and is not religious or an appropriate place for religion?
This is Robbie. It's a really complex question, and I think from a survey research point of view, it's really hard sometimes to tease these things out. I mean, you're exactly right. We had a question on our California Proposition 8 survey that asked people who voted for Proposition 8 why they voted for Proposition 8, and we had, you know, an option for saying it's because they supported a traditional view of marriage between one man and one woman. We had an option for people who said that they supported it was because of their religious beliefs, and it, you know, it's often hard to tease out exactly where those lines are, because I think for many people they're intertwined. But we did have people, the 8 in 10 of people saying one of those two things was the reason that they voted for Proposition 8 in California. But like I said, teasing out exactly where the line is between, for example, support for traditional marriage and where the line is to religious values is often really difficult.
It is a complex question, and I know that I asked about 8 things in that one question. I'm wondering if anybody is aware of any polling work that has been done to try to tease that out, to try to sort of define those things.
Do you, Robbie or Dave,
yeah.
Do you know?
Well, I would say that, you know, our question on the Prop 8 poll was sort of our attempt to try to tease that out. And it actually was built on an earlier poll that was an open-ended question where people were just said, you know, why did you vote for Proposition 8 if they had voted for Proposition 8? And they were able to give a number of things. And those categories were basically how things fell out, were either kind of a straight-up kind of moral objection or religious objection. And this really does get down to the connections between really morality and religion, which are just, exceptionally thorny questions.
Mm-hmm.
I will say from an advocacy standpoint, I have been involved in many, many conversations about does it serve us to try and help folks tease apart sort of religious R-I-T-E from civil R-I-G-H-T in terms of the marriage question. And again, at least as a practical matter, it seems that as opposed to in some of the European examples, in this country, it is so inextricably linked in people's minds that it makes that argument of, you know, trying to tease apart civil marriage from religious marriage very, very difficult. So I'm not really answering your question except to really affirm that they are so deeply intertwined with one another that I'm not even sure if people are aware of the difference for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Interesting.
Thank you. We have reached the allotted time for today's Q&A session. Now I'll turn the call back over to Dr. Jones for any closing remarks. Sir, go ahead.
Great. Well, I'll keep these short and sweet. Thank you, everybody, for staying on the call and for such a lively discussion. I want to thank especially Reverend Rebecca Vogel from the Institute for Welcoming Resources and Professor Clyde Wilcox from Professor of Government at Georgetown University for both for being on the call and for helping this be such a fruitful and in-depth conversation. Thank everyone on the call. And just say again that our a word of gratitude for Pew for this fine work over two decades of work, and our hope that this new report by Public Religion Research will provide a lens for journalists and the public to understand the implications of these long-term trends and to think about best practices going forward in polling. And once again, it's available on our website at www.publicreligion.org. We'll have the full report that you can download as a PDF, a press release, and as soon as it's available, the audio of this call. So thanks again, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you. This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect and have a great day.